This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's talk about the internal war we have going on in the country. One of our senators betrayed us. Surprise, surprise. Marsha Blackburn is here. So much more coming up on I'm Right. Let's have a kind of back to the basics chat, shall we, before we get to what Pete Hegseth is doing, why it's so important. And Trump yesterday, he signed an executive order. And the executive order was wasn't majorly important as far as tangibly doing anything, really. It was an executive order to say, hey, the day we won World War I, it's a big deal, and we should celebrate that. That should be a holiday. The day we won World War II, that's kind of a big deal, and it should be a holiday, national holiday. I love that he put in there, we don't need any days off, we already have too many holidays, but should be a day we celebrate. So why even bring this up at all? Because it wasn't that major. Well, it was the left's reaction to it. And what we're about to talk about may seem very basic, and if you're where you need to be, it will be very basic. If you're not where you need to be, you won't like it. It'll probably make you uncomfortable. But accepting what the motivation of Democrats today is everything. Know thy enemy, if you will. Knowing what they truly want is everything. And look, in life, period. When you go out for a date, if you're single and you're out there dating, it's important. It's important to understand what do you want? What are your motivations? Just looking for a good time at a Red Lobster on a Friday night? Looking to settle down and get somebody, you know, a wedding ring, a child? What's their motivation? Does it match yours? Understanding motivations are important. Democrats hate the United States of America, and they want to destroy it. I can't put it any more frankly than that. And until you get to that place of understanding, you'll always be lost. You'll always be shocked. You'll wake up every day and you'll look at the news. What are they? I can't believe that. Do you ever find yourself saying that? You say that a lot? I can't believe they. Why can't you believe it? What would you do if you hated the country? Do you remember a few years ago when this Mara Gray went on MSNBC and she said this about the flag?
Long Island this weekend, visiting a really dear friend. And I was really disturbed. I saw, you know, dozens and dozens of pickup trucks with, explicatives against Joe Biden on the back of them, Trump flags, and some cases just dozens of American flags, which, you know, is also just disturbing because essentially the message was clear. It was, this is my country.
I'm glad we dug that up because I wanted to talk to you about what we're discussing here. How I came to this realization, because I was once one of those very naive people who believe that the people on the left, they're just kind of misguided. We all want the same things, that lame thing. I used to think like that too. Well, we all kind of want the same things. They're just kind of naive, or they don't understand. They don't understand that taking away guns will increase violent crime. They don't understand that opening up the border will actually destroy the country. I made all these excuses. But it was that conversation that Mara Gray just had. I had it with so many. And the conversation usually went something like this. They were starting to sprinkle politics into professional sports, TV commercials, things like that. Companies were starting to take always left-wing political stances. I started pitching a fit about it because this is back when I was super into sports. Can I just watch the NFL game without all this politics? And every Democrat I knew, every one of them, said, politics have always been in the NFL. What's your problem? And I would, of course, ask, why? How do you figure that? They would say, well, they always have the military there. They always play the national anthem there. Now think about that for a moment. The United States military is partisan. Not partisan to me. Shouldn't be. It's a big organization full of people who are willing to lay down their lives for defense of America. Not political. Well, in the eyes of somebody who hates America, the organization dedicated to protecting America is very, very political. You see? That's how this works. That brings me to what Pete Hegseth did. He just announced 20% cut across the board of 4-stars, generals and admirals. Now, you should understand we have more 4-stars today than we had during World War II. We have this because the United States military is a corrupt criminal organization, a good old boy network, where evil, corrupt scumbags promote each other all the time, reward each other with generous gifts. They bounce back and forth from being 3-stars and 4-stars into working at the defense industry for $1 million a year. It's a really terrible system. Here was Pete talking about it.
We are leaving wokeness and weakness behind. No more pronouns, no more climate change obsession, no more emergency vaccine mandates, no more dudes in dresses. We're done with that. We're focused on lethality, meritocracy, accountability, standards, and readiness.
That's magnificent. But you can't do that without cleaning out the communist rot at the top, and so they're starting to chop away at the top. But that brings me back to a conversation we've had many times, and we'll have it again right now. Why did the system try so hard to stop Pete Hegseth? And why are they still trying so hard to stop Pete Hegseth? In fact, let's not even do the system part. Let's talk about our role in this, your role and my role. I'm talking about our role as people on the right. Because the left, Democrats, elected Democrats, they don't actually have the power to stop really much at all right now. Yet some things are getting stopped. Pete Hegseth almost had his nomination withdrawn. We had to bully Joni Ernst into backing off. But there was one senator from the very red state now of North Carolina, Tom Tillis is his name. And he was working very hard behind the scenes to torpedo Pete Hegseth. Now, keep in mind, North Carolina could have the reddest Republican humanly possible. Instead, they have Tom Tillis. And it's funny, Tom Tillis is in the news because Tom Tillis is also the one out there blocking Ed Martin. Yes, that's right. You see, he's already announced he wouldn't support him.
He is, I don't believe he's being advanced to the markup, and I met with Mr. Martin. He seems like a good man. Most of my concerns related to January 6th, and he built a compelling case on some of the 12 prosecutions that were probably heat-of-the-moment bad decisions, but where we probably have a difference is I think anybody that breached the perimeter should have been in prison for some period of time. Whether it's 30 days or 3 years is debatable, but I have no tolerance for anybody who entered the building on January the 6th, and that's probably where most of the friction was. If Mr. Martin were being put forth as a U.S. attorney for any district except the district where January 6th happened, the protest happened, I'd probably support him. But not in this district. At this point, I've indicated to the White House I wouldn't support his nomination.
Has Trump called you?
Mr. President and I talk all the time.
Does that make you angry? Do keep in mind that Ed Martin taking over the D.C. district is pretty much the most important thing Trump wants to do. That district is full of communist snakes who've attacked the American people with a vigor over the last 4 years, throwing as many of them as they could in prison. Ed Martin's going to go in there and clean it out. And that's why people like Tom Tillis, red state Republicans, step up and stop it. Whenever we're right on the cusp of a really, really important victory, we'll flirt with important victories, we'll do a little of this, little of that, but when we're on the cusp of something tangible, something lasting, it's red state Republicans that step in and stop it. It's always John Cornyn, it's always James Lankford, Tom Tillis, Cassidy, Thune, Rounds, Unit Curtis, you name it. Red state after red state after red state. So my point in this little rant is it comes back to you and me changing our voting behavior in primaries and changing the voter behavior of the people we know, because we can't get long-lasting, tangible wins with these losers in there. And speaking of Lankford, let's talk really briefly here before we wrap this up about immigration. Because again, the communists hate the country, as we just talked about. They're bringing in as many foreigners as humanly possible. If you look at the television set and you look at people like Ilhan Omar saying like this and you're mortified, you should understand that we have, in a roundabout way, people like this sitting in Congress because of red state Republicans.
Congresswoman Omar, I'm Miles Morrell with the Daily Caller News Foundation. Do you think more of your Democratic colleagues should be traveling to El Salvador to advocate on behalf of Rodrigo Garcia?
I think you should
I'm sorry, what, Congresswoman? Who should?
You.
Why me?
We're not taking any questions right now, but here you go.
Yeah, thanks.
I would say our country should be more fearful of white men across our country, because they are actually causing most of the deaths within this country.
You angry that she's in Congress? She's in Congress because for decades, the United States of America has allowed the mass importation of barbarians from foreign lands. And now communist activists can show up from those foreign lands and get elected to Congress and then use their position in Congress to subvert and destroy the United States of America. And if you're upset about that mass importation, you should understand it doesn't happen without red state Republicans. James Lankford, just last year, from the reddest state in the union, Oklahoma, tried to get amnesty passed with the Democrats. That's why you have Ilhan Omar and her like in Congress. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We will talk to Marsha Blackburn about Ed Martin, about many things in just a moment. Before we talk to her, let me talk to you about making sure your T levels get up, about making sure your energy levels, forget about your T levels for a moment, your energy levels, whatever you are, man, woman, do you want to feel good, full of energy all the time? Good mood? That's what Chalk is here for. Chalk has natural herbal supplements, the best I've ever seen in my life. Chalk has a male vitality stack, a female vitality stack. They have Chalk lip powder. It's packed full of vitamins and minerals. Whatever you're looking to improve upon, Chalk has a natural solution for you. You want to feel good like I feel all the time? Go get a subscription. 17.76% off at chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
You may have heard one big, beautiful bill floating around Congress. This bill is big and beautiful for Main Street America and investors alike. The president's signature tax legislation will prevent an enormous tax hike on Main Street.
Well, I like Scott Bessent. He seems like a very sharp guy. So I'm not dogging on him for rolling out the talking points, but you'll have to excuse me if I don't think this Congress is capable of a big, beautiful bill, nor is any Congress, because everyone stuffs a bunch of corrupt crap in there. Joining me now is Senator Marsha Blackburn from the great state of Tennessee. Senator, do I even want to ask what's in this big, beautiful bill?
The main thing is this helps us pass President Trump's agenda, because it will make the Trump tax cuts from 2017 permanent, and then also expand R&D, bonus depreciation, and interest. You know, those expired at the end of last year, and so we have to put them back. That means we have to have a pay for, and that's where all of those good DOGE cuts come in, and we'll be able to pay for those. There are some other things that are savings for the American people that we're looking at, like one of my bills, which is to remove the income tax from Social Security for seniors. And we'll do our best to get that in there, and also a child care tax credit for employers that offer child care for their employees. And there is a provision that exists already for large corporations, but we're adding small businesses to that. So, you know, Jesse, we've got this bill that we're working on, and then we have the opportunity before the 26 elections to do two more reconciliation bills. And we will be able to do another one this fall and one next year this time. So we can have three big, beautiful bills. And I'm looking forward to saving the taxpayers as much as we can, getting to a balanced budget, which is President Trump's goal, and then also beginning to cut into the baseline so that we cut into the debt.
All right, let's talk about what we can expect going forward. Permanent tax cuts is music to my ears, but we've got two reconciliation bills still to come. Are there going to be good things in that or a bunch of bad stuff that's horrible?
Oh, no. I think what you will do is see some other savings. We've got a health care proposals that are floating around. Part of my work on reining in the pharmacy benefit managers, they're the ones that drive up the cost of pharmaceuticals for our nation's seniors. And reining them in, moving them from a rebate over to a service fee, a flat fee, would save a lot of money. Looking at putting a shot clock on insurance companies to make decisions and be there to pay bills. This is something, whether it is Medicaid or Medicare, they slow walk paying the hospitals. And they may take 200 days to pay a bill. And what we're doing is saying, no, these are actions that you pre-approved, and then you need to pay the bill when you get the bill. So there are different things we can do that will help help the government run more efficiently, that will reduce cost and will yield a savings for the taxpayer. That is our goal, and that is all part of President Trump's agenda.
Senator, before I let you go, I wanted to ask about Ed Martin. I know Tom Tillis came out. He sure sounds like he's a no and a fairly firm no. Does that sink Ed Martin? Is he going to get through?
I don't know the answer to that. I've not talked with my colleagues at Judiciary. I did hear someone mention Senator Tillis's comments, but you know, Jesse, I don't know. I know that that Ed Martin has been there as the acting in D.C. and has done a solid job getting criminals into court and carrying out these prosecutions and stopping some of this crime wave that has been so rampant here in D.C.
Senator, thank you. I appreciate you very much. All right. Speaking of a crime wave, we have judges committing crimes. We'll talk to Wade about that next. Wade Stotts, I'm sorry. Before we get to Wade, let me talk to you about getting to sleep. It is a wonderful thing to know, not hope, know you're going to sleep like a baby at night. Because we've all been there, laying there, tossing and turning. And then what happens? Your mind starts thinking about the next day. Oh, my gosh, I'm going to be tired. I'm going to feel horrible. My eyes are... Get some dream powder from Beam in your life. You will thank me for it. Everyone else does. It's just a bag. It's a bag. But it has dream powder inside of it. It's hot chocolate. Only it has special, natural things in it like reishi and melatonin and things. You sip on a cup of delicious hot chocolate before bed, sleep like a little baby. Up to 40% off at shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
Government wanted Owen McIntyre to spend the time before trial behind bars, but the judge and Boston sided with the defense in this case, which cited multiple medical issues facing the 19-year-old, including autism spectrum disorder, gender dysphoria, and ADHD. McIntyre's attorney argued the teen should be released, citing serious and ongoing medical needs and treatments that could not or would not be provided while in federal detention. The defense filing says McIntyre is being treated for depression and since March has been receiving gender-affirming care. That care would likely be interrupted or terminated in federal custody.
So this guy's not behind bars because he's going through tranny surgery? Joining me now, Wade Stott, host of The Wade Show with Wade. Okay, Wade, could you please clarify what exactly is the problem here? What's going on?
Yeah, so a trans terrorist is basically the left's George Washington, so I don't expect them to really throw the book at their ideal American. So, but there's no way that they weren't going to get special treatment, whatever he or she is. So it's the anarcho half of anarcho-tyranny. So the left's favored groups get a pass to cause destruction, make life miserable for normal people. And they release the person for also medicated for their ADHD and depression. So I don't know if sitting still in class is quite the same thing as thinking that you're a man or a woman when you're not. No concern, actually, alleged terrorist walking free.
Yes, no concern at all. Wade, earlier today, the Supreme Court upheld the tranny ban, which I guess is something, but I despise the Supreme Court. I've been screaming about ignoring the Supreme Court, but this is something you've been hot on for a while when it comes to, he has to obey the lower courts. He can't deport people. He's a president. He has to ignore them.
Yeah, I noticed a lot of this during the Trump trials, that we were sort of sitting around in our major political moments, waiting around for people who are accountable to no one to say something that we knew was probably going to be ridiculous. And so the legal battles weren't going to stop when they couldn't put Trump in jail. They definitely weren't going to stop after he became president. This is a good ruling from the Supreme Court. But really what we're seeing now is a baseline controversy over who's going to be sovereign. Judges are seen right now as the same kind of priest class that doctors were back in 2020. So people appeal to these rulings the same way they might appeal to Fauci and others and whoever else. So the judicial system really is just one area where our system has become a parody of itself. So because the original American system assumed the original American character, what we're seeing is an actual crisis of sovereignty, the question of who is going to rule. So once in a while, you can create a system like the Constitution, like the American system, and once in a while, there's going to be something that pops up that where the rules aren't clear, where there isn't a section in the Constitution that tells us what to do when 20 million foreigners invade over the course of just a few years. So when something like that happens, whoever makes the decision is the one who's actually in charge. So no clear legal precedent means that somebody's got to make a call. The problem is that the courts really can slow Trump down. So now that someone has to make the call, the left is sort of in the conservative position, trying to uphold or at least preserve their procedural roadblocks that they can use to up against Trump. But Trump's advantage is that he's on the offensive. He's in pursuit of his goals. Again, I agree with the recent one from the Supreme Court, but that's, again, the question of sovereignty is still there.
How did we end up as a country with a bunch of judges that, I mean, frankly, hate the United States of America? We're not talking about somebody who leans left or something like that. When you look at these lower court judges, the D.C. judges, these are communist revolutionaries in black robes. How in the world did we get here?
Yeah, we have a system that we like to think of as being about the rule of law. So that's really easy to pervert into the rule of judges. So the rule of law assumes a law above the people, and then that these judges are here just to rule on things and are supposed to take in the precedent of what's happened before. But as soon as you take people, again, who, like you said, I think hate America, they're not trying to preserve the original intent of any of these laws. What basically happens is that they'll make a call and then have some clerk find some precedent to you know, tack on at the end as a sort of footnote. The real difference, yeah, is the character behind the person. If the person is there, there can be disagreements between two people who love the same things, what the right thing to do is in a particular situation. But the kind of disagreements between someone who loves the country and loves our founding, loves the principles and the people who made us who we are, it's different if the person hates those people. So that those are different characters of arguments.
Yeah, kind of blows up the whole argument, to be honest with you. Wade, thank you, brother. Come back soon. All right. We have a lot. But before we get on to some heavier stuff, let's lighten your load. Let's lighten the bills you pay. How much do you pay every month for your cell phone? We had T-Mobile, of course, because I have two teenage sons who are meatheads. They have phones now, too. So that's four lines. Me, Ab, and the boys. When we switched from T-Mobile to Pure Talk, our bill got cut in half. We were floored. Ab thought it was a misprint. In half. Average family saves $1,000 a year. You want to pocket an extra grand a year? By the way, you're not losing coverage. They're on the same 5G network as the big guys. Switch to Pure Talk. The patriotic cell phone company. Save you money. Same network. Why wouldn't you switch? PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
The first relates to gain-of-function research. Gain-of-function research is a type of biomedical research where pathogens are adulterated, viruses are adulterated to make them more potent or to change the way that they function. Many people believe that gain-of-function research was one of the key causes of the COVID pandemic that struck us in the last decade. What this executive order does, first of all, it provides powerful new tools to enforce the ban on federal funding for gain-of-function research abroad. It also strengthens other oversight mechanisms related to that issue and creates an overarching strategy to ensure that biomedical research in general is being conducted safely and in a way that ultimately protects human health more.
It's a big deal. Could have been that we wouldn't have had the problem we had.
Right? A lot of people say that, sir.
If we had this done earlier. Thank you.
Okay. We got an executive order. But what does all this stuff mean? I still find it confusing to this day why some of this stuff even exists. Joining me now to break down some of this stuff for us, Jeffrey A. Tucker, president of the Brownstone Institute. Jeffrey, can we go back to the basics here? And can you explain to me, like I'm really, really dumb, why there is any entity on the planet that is trying to make viruses more potent?
As we know, The fundamental reason does actually trace to bioweapons research. So the idea is to make a pathogen, make the cure, and then have a weapon that you can use against civilian populations. RFK gave a miniature talk at that event. It was like 2 minutes description of the history of U.S. bioweapons research in every country in the world. Since World War II, it's wicked, it's horrible, it's sort of post-nuclear bomb stuff. Now, for sure, none of this discussion about SARS-CoV-2 or COVID has publicly been talked about in the framework of bioweapons research, but it's pretty well known that that's really ultimately what this research is about. You could render it in a number of different ways, but you could put it in the civilian context that, oh, we're just looking for better ways to get ahead of zoonotic outbreaks, the diseases that pass from animals to humans, and we need antidotes to fix that. And okay, fine. But more fundamentally, it is all wrapped up with the bioweapons research issue, and that is all classified material, and so that's why we don't talk about it. That's why we don't have a lot of records. That's why even this executive order seems to carve out certain exemptions, which frustrate people when they look at it. Like, well, why don't we just ban it? Why don't we just stop this nonsense? But But that gets us into another area entirely. So they won't go there. Nonetheless, I'm thrilled by this executive order as it exists. It's a tremendous leap forward. And I found myself just a little bit, you know, almost emotional just watching this press conference with Jay and Marty Makary and RFK up there with Trump signing this executive order, because it is true that the COVID experience traces to this gain of function research that is taking place on contract with the Wuhan lab. And those people in that room, at least three of them, Trump presided over the whole thing, at least in its inception. And we'll get to that in a second. But the other three were three of the top resistors of the COVID controls, the lockdowns, and the response to the pandemic conditions that took place in March. And there they are now in charge, passing executive orders to try to contain the kind of research that led to the whole chaos. I do want to say one quick thing about that clip you played that I thought was so very interesting. We all know this happened under Trump. It began, you know, in March 2020, when, at least according to the official record, Birx, Fauci, and others, we don't know who the others were, leaned into Trump and they said, basically, listen, this is going to happen one way or the other, so you better shape up and go along with it, right? And he acquiesced. Now, within a few weeks of that happening, he realized he had lost control of his presidency, unfortunately. And that was a tragedy for him. And he was basically not the president between March and when the election. And he kind of knew it. He was sort of reduced to tweeting his way all the way to the election. But there was a little hint of pensive sadness in what he said. It's like, we wouldn't have, if this had been in place before, none of this would have happened. And you could just see just a moment where he hesitates, in a moment of personal reflection. We've had far too little of that. You know, we've wanted for 4 years for him to just kind of make a clean statement that this is a disaster, that he allowed a disaster to happen under his watch, that he didn't resist the pandemic plan hard enough. But he's never said that. We have to believe that he does regret it, but we don't really have the evidence of that. So that was just a really interesting moment when he looked back and said, gosh, I wish that this had been in place before. But at the same time, you know, it's so remarkable. When he got elected in 2016, if you'd come to him and said, Mr. President, you need to be careful because there's some dangerous research being taken place in Wuhan where they're going to produce a virus, then they're going to come to you and say, we have the cure, and tell you to destroy the U.S. economy and participate in the destruction of the global economy, you better shut this down now. I mean, would he have believed it? I wouldn't think so. I mean, that's kind of the last thing you would expect to have happened as president, for some wild and crazy caper like that to take place.
Jeffrey, I want to go back to something you said a couple minutes ago about the, you know, I wish they would just ban it all, but they left some carve-outs in there, and I mean, I guess we all kind of know why. Well, why?
Well, it has something to do with national security and the belief that governments around the world are still engaged in this research, and the belief that it would amount to unilateral disarmament if the U.S. stopped it, you know, altogether. I think that's very likely what this is about, that the U.S. would somehow handicap itself in the bioweapons arms race if it just stopped doing it completely. And, you know, national security would be saying, hey, this is crazy. Iran's doing it. Israel's doing it. Russia's doing it. China's doing it. Why shouldn't we do it too? Something like that. Or if we're going to stop, let's not make a public announcement to that effect, because that would then broadcast to all governments in the world that you're free to create all the pathogens you want, and the U.S. would be completely disarmed. There's probably some I can imagine that national security officials were involved in this. So Trump finds himself in this position of threading the needle between, you know, these brilliant people in the room with him just now, and then other people who are not in that room who are whispering in his ear otherwise. So even given all that, the executive order is, I think, it's actually vastly better than I would have expected. I never would have expected an executive order like this at all. So for this to come out shows we're on a really good track. And to tell you the truth, I think this is probably just the beginning of unraveling the entanglements between the executive branch and the pharmaceutical industry and the bioweapons industry. I think we're going to see more efforts along this line. This is a big step, but there's probably going to be more things coming in the coming weeks and months.
Jeffrey, why China? And let me finish the question this way. Of all the things that are very odd and nefarious and evil with this whole thing, the fact that we are working with our mortal enemy, China, in China to create weaponized viruses, that in and of itself, everything else aside, is so bonkers to me. How did we get there?
Well, it probably began when the U.S. Invited China into the World Trade Organization. There was a widespread belief for decades that we were all friends, we're all cooperating and everything. And one of the strangest things about the Wuhan experience with the NIH is just how friendly everybody seemed to be. Everybody was cooperating. There was an assumption that even though we're really different, we're really all on the same team, we're all working together. And there was not a lot of suspicion going back and forth. There's also people like Fauci and the industry he represents are kind of, they sort of represent a meta layer of government in the world, sort of a globalist force that's not necessarily focused on the national interest of the United States. I mean, that was sort of the ideology for decades after the Cold War, that we're all in this together and it's all going to be great. We're all going to grow together. We're going to trade together. We're going to exchange secrets together. We're going to cooperate on science together. And that's the way it was in Wuhan. And of course, the CCP doesn't play like that, right?
Yeah.
But the U.S. scientific establishment, absolutely did. The other thing is that there was a lot of sketchiness associated with doing gain-of-function research in the U.S., and it's very dangerous. It had been ended under Obama, of all things, and then sort of restarted. But Fauci was looking for places around the world to put his bioweapons lab. But I say Fauci. I mean, Fauci working on behalf of this meta layer of classified bioweapons industry. We're looking for labs around the world to do this work, to keep it out of prying eyes. So it was a secret lab. There are many others, according to Tulsi Gabbard. There are many others around the world. This executive order takes big steps towards shutting that down. This is a really scary, clandestine world that's you about which you hear rumors and talk when you're hanging around DC circles. You'll run into somebody who claims to know all about it and give you an earful, but very little verifiable information about where the labs were and what they're doing and that sort of thing. That's necessarily the case because it's all classified. I want to say something else here too, because I don't think readers entirely understand, as I didn't for a very long time, what is the connection between this lab leak in Wuhan, whether it was intentional or accidental, I don't really know. What was the connection between this lab leak that probably occurred in September or so of 2019 and the lockdowns that came to us in the spring of 2020? That's where it gets a little bit murky, because it took me a long time to sort of knit these stories together. But apparently the way it went was this: the lab leak happened, the military Olympics took place in Wuhan, lots of people got sick, Fauci and company and many others, the military certainly, intelligence officials, CIA and so on, certainly knew about the leak as early as October, and knew that it had already come to the U.S., And according to the official record, it was Jeremy Farrar and Fauci were on the phone in late January trying to figure out what to do about it. Now, I assume that that happened much, much earlier. It probably was in November, December, something like that. But anyway, they did it late January. And Farrar says in his book that they were panicked that they were going to get blamed for starting World War III. So, you know, this is a kind of a weird world of apocalyptic scientific crazy people. And they believe that they have this power to start World War III, and they briefly thought that they had. So it really did turn on this question: was it a lab origin or was it zoonotic origin? And I think what must have happened is that Fauci and all of his cohorts decided that they would just commission a paper that would announce that it jumped from a pangolin or a bat to humans thanks to the wet markets in China, and that will underscore their key research thing is we have to continue doing gain-of-function research so we can get ahead of the emergent spillovers that are happening from animals to humans due to industrialization, urbanization, whatever kind of deforestation. They give all these kind of excuses. So they thought they would turn what was really a lab leak that would be blamed on them into a story of zoonotic release that would underscore their whole spillover theory and give them more power to continue their gain-of-function research and their planning. And by August, David Morans and Anthony Fauci had co-authored a major article, August of 2020, a major article in the journal called Cell, that laid out a 10,000-year history of viral spillovers due to too much moving around, too much freedom, too much pet ownership, too much urbanization, and so on. And they said in that article that in order to prevent this kind of thing in the future, we need a radical reconstruction of the infrastructure of the human social order, something like that. And it was a tremendously scary article. Now, this article comes out during lockdown. So this was really their vision. It was a lab leak that they didn't want to get blamed for. So instead, they decided to spin it as zoonotic release, a consequence of spillover, and therefore a justification for them having ever more power. So part of the thinking of the lockdown was to create a kind of gaslight the entire public for as long as possible, spread fear and panic and terror under the presumption that it was terrible pathogens leaking from animals to humans. Get everybody whipped up in a frenzy. Here's your mask. Here's your plexiglass. Here's your arrows on your grocery store. Your kids can't go to school. Your church is closed. We have to cancel Easter and everything, because we have to wait for the great cure, which is coming soon enough. They promised it, in the fall to Trump. Yeah. And so Trump probably believed that he was going to distribute these vaccines to the whole country and everybody's going to get cured and regard him as a hero. They delayed it as long as possible, in fact, till after the election. And then when it came out, the idea was to guarantee maximum uptake of their product. They were selling a consumer product because Pfizer and Moderna, with their mRNA technologies, working very closely with the bioweapons industry, obviously. It was a military-run, kind of response and program. So all of this happened. It all sounds cray-cray. But the thing that ruined it for them and exposed them was the fact that the great shot didn't work. Now, keep in mind, probably had reached some level of pathogenic endemicity by the summer, even earlier, of 2020. So they had to kind of keep a frenzy going throughout the rest of the year and all the way into the next year about community spread. Oh, you're all going to die. Even though the data was very clear that despite us being a lab leak, it was not actually dangerous to working age people, healthy people at all.
I remember it was yesterday. It was a friggin' nightmare.
It's when the trust collapsed.
Yeah. Yeah, and it still collapsed. It's freaking awful. Jeffrey, thank you. Come back soon, sir. We have Light in the Mood next. All right, it is time to lighten the mood. And I don't know if you knew this, but today is National Nurses Day. And so we thought we would honor one of the all-time greats. I have been in the hospital a couple times, nothing major, but I had an emergency appendectomy and my tonsils out and stuff like that. And the nurses I've had have been very, for the most part, very helpful, very pleasant. But I'm sad to say, especially as a young man, I never had a nurse like Pearl.
And I had a nurse named Pearl Nelson, military. She'd come in and do things that I don't think you learn in medical school, nursing school. She'd whisper in my ear. I couldn't understand her. She'd whisper, she'd lean down. She'd actually breathe on me to make sure that there was a connection, a human connection. She even went home and brought back her pillow from her own bed because she knew the one where I had the one comfortable. But I'm not joking.
Pearl sounds awesome. I'll see you tomorrow.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.